Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Maverick Way Radio Hour. Hey there, this is Blaine Freese live at Sizzle Studios in the lovely northeast of the United States. We're waiting for Oria. Oria Pollock just texted me. He is our shaman and our special guest for today. Just got a text that he is on his way, going to be joining us here in a few seconds. Ah, there he is. All right.
All right.
Oria, here you are.
Yes, I actually.
All right.
This is a perfect start for the episode because I haven't been frustrated in a couple of months.
Yeah, man.
It's a good
so how are you
start.
This evening?
I am great. I am countryside as we speak, looking at the moon, enjoying our, vision to spread more light and love in the world. So how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited to have the second episode of the Maverick Way Radio Hour going on. I'm super excited. I've just been, kind of riffing a little bit about, kind of shared the idea that we were beating around yesterday about doing the monk and the shaman.
What's a monk? What's a monk?
What is a monk? That's actually a really great question. And that's one of the discussions I had with my Zen teacher yesterday. So a monk, the monk actually comes from, the derivation of it is actually mono. So a monk is traditionally someone who does one of two things, either takes vows of to either spend the rest of their life in a monastery or to, kind of do the guru thing and go disappear, find a cave up in a mountainside and spend that time alone, basically practicing and meditating. First off, we're going to have a discussion about whether or not we actually have a show called The Monk and the Shaman. Essentially, what he and I talked about is a lay ordination. So a monk is actually someone who really does take vows of celibacy and disconnection from regular society. But in the Zen tradition that he is in and that we've been practicing, the Soto Zen tradition, that traces back to Japan. And then, of course, from there traces back to China, India, to where Shakyamuni, our hero, the Buddha, as we call him, came from. But so that's really what a monk is. Now, in the U.S., in Western culture, a lot of things have changed.
So is a monk, I got a question. Is a monk... does a monk service his community, or a monk is more about a personal practice?
Well, I think there's a couple different ways that manifests. Some monks definitely service the community. And I think those are probably the people who live in a monastery connected to a community. They may or may not be teachers. There's a lot of monks that just go out and travel, and that's kind of their practice. But there's also the other kind of monk that really does just go, sit on the mountainside, disconnect from everything and go, go deep inward. So I think it can manifest either way.
I assume you're the monk in this equation, right?
Yeah.
So where do you fit in as far as your... you're a white person from Jersey, and I'm
a
white
and
person from, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say even before that, Minnesota, but,
right.
Yeah.
And I'm a white person from Israel who now lives in New York City. Mm-hmm. And, it'd be interesting for future generations as well as the people who are listening right now to kind of say, okay, the monk and the shaman, that's cool, but they're not the typical monk and the typical shaman, yet we somehow decide to be okay with people referring to us as that, or at least doing a podcast called The Monk and the Shaman. So where do you, I'm just curious, how do you identify as a monk? What's monkish about you?
Well, for me, you know, I'll tell you a little story that really kind of is where I come from with this. I grew up Lutheran, you know, which is essentially Reformed Catholic, and at a very young age started really wondering, you know, with this whole organized religion thing, was it really working? I remember being in Sunday school at about the age of eight years old, and, you know, they were talking about, okay, you know, there's heaven and then there's hell, and there may or may not be, because, you know, as Lutherans, we're not really clear on that whole middle space. But basically, it sounded really easy, right? So in the Christian tradition, it's basically you accept Jesus as your savior, and then you get to go to heaven. And I remember raising my hand, and even at that young age, there were two things that popped up in my head that really confused me. One is I was aware enough of the universe or the United States to know, or the world, to know that way more people even living at that time were not Christians, and in fact had never even had the opportunity to be exposed to the teachings of Christ. So why would these people be relegated to hell? And secondly, you know, Jesus was, you know, around a couple thousand years ago, and what about all those people who were born before Jesus? And so I didn't really get it at that point. So that's when I kind of started, you know, I'm not really big on labels. I wouldn't really call myself an atheist or anything, but I just, at that point, I started to get really disillusioned with religion itself. But I was always a seeker. I always read a lot about religion and spirituality, and, you know, even in high school, I was always trying to figure out, you know, and maybe the underlying question for me was, you know, how do people work? You know, what is the purpose of life? How do people work? You know, what are we doing here? And so, you know, that was an exploration for me. So, you know, fast forward a number of years ahead into my 40s, where I was going through, I had actually just gotten divorced, and I was visiting my aunt, who is a lama in the Kagyu lineage of the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And she sat me down one day, and my divorce had just gotten final. I was in the process of losing my job. I wasn't sure I was going to keep my house. You know, essentially everything in my life, I had just stopped drinking. I had been drinking very heavily for several years. So I was just, I even stopped drinking coffee, for God's sake. Thank God I've started doing that again. Or else I wouldn't be here today.
Yes.
we'll talk about addiction in another episode. But anyway,
yes.
So
while we drink, you know, coffee.
Yes, once in a while we drink coffee. Plant medicine, if you will. But, you know, my aunt sat me down and she's like, I'd like you to consider taking refuge today. The Rinpoche is giving refuge. And I'm like, well, what's refuge? And she said, it's exactly what it sounds like. And I looked at her, considered for about 8 seconds, and said, refuge sounds really good right now. I think I'll do that. And so we went in, and the ceremony itself of taking refuge in the Dharma, which are the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha and his philosophy. And as we were going through this, there was an English translator, and every one of these things that we were making promises to, you know, taking these vows, were actually the way I'd always been trying to live my entire life throughout. So in that moment, you know, here I was, I think 42 years old at the time, just blown away by how good that felt. But then at the same time, frustrated as hell that I had to be 42 years old before I was ever really, you know, offered this kind of teaching and the beauty of this tradition. And like literally in that moment, I said, all right, my life's purpose is to share the Dharma and to get it out to as many people as I possibly can. So to me, that's when I kind of put that hat on. You know, I was scheduled for ordination, receiving Shuke Tokudo in the Soto tradition a few years ago, and then we had some issues in my Zen community, and my teacher stopped actually ordaining people, and he's just starting to do that again. So, you know, the actual title, I'm not officially an ordained monk, but he and I have discussed it a number of times. Is like, you know, live that way. So to me, what a monk means is someone, it kind of has two pieces, or at least the way it manifests for me is one is I really do accept those teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, the Buddhist philosophy, all of that stuff as kind of the core of who I am and how I approach the world and how I approach people. And then the second piece for me is I come from a family of teachers. I've been a college professor. I love speaking. I love being on stage. You know, the second part of that is, all right, so now it's because I've been given these gifts and this desire to talk to people. My purpose is to then share these teachings. And to me, that's what it is. And, you know, have I taken vows of chastity? No. Am I going to, or celibacy? No.
Well, what's the difference between chastity and celibacy? Is it even the same category?
I honestly don't know that. I think chastity came up in my head, but the vows that they take are celibacy. And I think chastity is, as I understand it, not having sex. Celibacy is completely turning that side of yourself off, which means, you know, not only not having sex with other people, but with yourself, and really just shutting that piece down and shutting that energy down. There was a time a few years ago after I'd started practicing that I considered doing that. My aunt's tradition, which I still practice in, the Kagyu tradition of Tibetan Buddhism, they do a three-month and three-day retreat that is, you go into retreat and you are away. And it's super hardcore training, and you actually take monk's vows when you do that. And then once you leave, you decide whether or not you want to continue as a monk. I actually went on that path and started looking into that and was talking about it and seriously considered doing it. And then I realized that at that point in my life, again, I was probably about a year, year and a half out of my divorce. And I realized that I was running away from something instead of running to something, and that I would be more effective being me. And, you know, here I am 50 years old and unmarried and childless, but, you know, I still don't discount the idea that I might end up, you know, with a lifetime partner and, you know, maybe kids and, you know, the traditional monk mono idea, you give that up. So that's what that means to me.
Well, I know you a little bit. It could be hard for me to envision you as a monk in that way, unless you have some sort of epiphany in one of your shamanic ceremonies, and I'll support you either way. But it sounds like we're both interested in the teachings and the spirituality aspect, and we come to it from different places. And just like your family has introduced you to monkhood and Zen and all that good stuff, you know, I was introduced to shamanism. So of course it would behoove us, or at least it would make more sense, to kind of accept shamanism, accept the monk and Zen as part of our life, especially growing up in America. It's like it's easier almost to give ourselves a title, whether it's for our own identification, to actually remind ourselves of the teachings, or, you know, even just to make it easier for people to relate to us. But at the core, I feel like you and me would without a doubt, give up any title, or even we don't even have any attachment to titles. It's all about the teachings and the lifestyle and what we choose to share in the world. So, you know, the whole monk and shaman thing, it could be really good because I haven't, you know, I've never really heard of that combination. And all I know is the monk and the tiger on Netflix. we can have fun with that. But ultimately, we are both really, you know, spiritual people, but with a punchy side to us, because we don't take anything for granted. And it would be fun to kind of see where the monk and the shaman have, I don't want to say different opinions, but I guess different points of views and different vantage points on the same topic. But let's admit it, we are, you know, what we really are is soul troublemakers or spiritual assholes, for lack of a better word.
I love that. Yeah. You said that on the phone yesterday as we were talking, and that hit me. I'm like, all right, the monk and the shaman, AKA the spiritual assholes. So, and yeah, you know, I told a friend that last night, and she's like, but why? That's so negative. And I don't see that as negative at all. To me, I find that whole idea of that incredibly freeing. Just, it's like, first off, you know, we have to acknowledge the fact that we're in the United States. You know, it's 2016. And if we're going to share what we're doing and what's important to us to other people, we got to get people's attention. You know, we've got to build community. And so there is definitely a branding element to what we're doing. You know, the monk and the shaman is kind of a cool concept. You know, the spiritual assholes. I love that. Yeah, I mean, you're the one that said it. So where did that come from? And you know, tell me what that means to you.
Sure. It's going to be, I want to start with Osho. I don't really have too many spiritual teachers and teachers that I like. And I can't even say that, you know, Osho is one of my teachers. But I will say that Osho is one of the few people that I actually listened to or read any of. Basically, Osho, Krishnamurti, just like a handful of people that I really enjoy. And Osho said something about that in order to wake up people, you got to shock them. Maybe that was a little bit in the 70s or whatnot. But there's really a truth. What he was saying is that people don't really like to be told what to do. They don't even really look for guidance. They come for something else. They come for solution. They come for entertainment. And in order to really kind of get in there, sometimes you have to shock them. So that's really this place where Spiritual Assholes was born. Also, me personally, I've been attending ceremonies and shamanic rituals for about 8 years now. And in the beginning, before I started working with people professionally, because what I do as an urban shaman is I work with people's spiritual experiences into every day. I professionally work with people in between sessions. That's what I do full time, between ceremonies. And before I was getting paid for it, they used to call me the journey terrorist before. I mean, this is like very few people know that except those who have called me journey terrorist, because in the sessions, in the ceremonies, my interactions would be jarring. They would be loving and compassionate, but they would be jarring. There would be a little bit of a drop kick to the heart or a kick to the side, because, you know, people get like either very heavy or very heady, or there is a sense, especially in America, because I came from Israel. I wasn't really aware of personal development until I came to America. I was religious in Israel, so maybe I would have if I wasn't. I grew up in a very religious society. But the point is, I would find myself just telling people the truth really, really quickly in session space, not always being invited, not always kind of, you know. Now I learned that in order for people to really pay attention that at least there's a space of invitation, whether they ask you for it or they pay you for it. And then there is, more of a space of invitation. But in the beginning, I would just tell people the truth. And some people would call me the journey terrorist because it would change the course of their session. They would change the course of their journey. And from that, kind of spiritual assholes was developing really mostly in my mind, because even I, when I was looking to brand market teachings, I would always think, well, it would be really great one day to either have a podcast or to do it. I mean, I was talking about it could be an actual webisodes and talk show and stuff on the internet, whether it's on internet or live TV. I think back then Oprah just launched her own network, and I was talking to people, and I said, wouldn't it be cool if there was a show called Spiritual Assholes, where we would share our truth, share our wisdom, but do it in a punchy way, meaning in how we really, really feel. Talk about people behind their backs in our own heads, and I don't mean it negatively, but, you know, just like the point where you go, like, come on, all right, I heard that before. There's a spirit. I understand that some people would take offense to it. Those who get it. We do take ourselves way too seriously. And in my own work, in my own journeys, in my own ceremonies where I've participated and awakened, I remember that the biggest lesson I would consistently come back to, do not take yourself so seriously. So for me, spiritual asshole is really the yin and the yang of the same equation, because first of all, the asshole itself is a really a metaphor for life. You know, what is life if not a series of tubes and holes and things coming in and going out? We have a lot of shame around sexuality and body parts. And at the same time, when I was religious, we used to pray every single time we'd come out of the bathroom. We would literally pray, thank you, God, for providing me with my asshole. It was a real prayer.
Really?
It's like, thank, yes. It still is a real prayer. And it literally speaks of the holes and the tubes and the exit points in the body, and thank you so very much, because without them, we wouldn't be here. So there really is like an embrace of our own physicality and our own like sources of life and, unfortunately, shame. And then at the same time, really kind of being able to make fun of our own seriousness. So that's where spiritual assholes came about. If I could, it would be fun for you and me, whether it be called Monk and the Shaman, aka spiritual assholes, for people to call in, and we would be able to riff back and forth and tell people the truth. And I think a one-man spiritual asshole show wouldn't really work well at first. It would take a while. But I think for two people to actually be able to back each other up and be kind and compassionate to the topics and the callers, I believe in that concept. I believe in that messaging and that branding, even though it's a little, like your friend said, negative. But you know what? You know, when the light comes off and people go to sleep, there's a whole other reality which people live in. And I think we all need a little reminder not to take this stuff so seriously and not to be such an asshole.
Yeah, you know, you remind me, there's a teacher in my Tibetan lineage by the name of Chögyam Trungpa. And there are a lot of people that believe that he is the greatest teacher of Dharma to come to the West. He's a Tibetan monk, came over here, Rinpoche, in the 60s. And he has this great discussion in a book. There's a great book called Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism. And in that book, he has this great discussion about compassion. And one of the things he found so frustrating about coming to the West was he said that in the West, we tend to practice what he called idiot compassion, which was a really weak way of being compassionate toward another, which in other words is to kind of identify what that person wants to hear or identify what that person feels that they need so that their feelings don't get hurt. And he's like, that's not compassion. Real compassion is exactly what you're talking about. Real compassion is, and it's really hard. It's been a huge practice for me, you know, since I read this years ago, to, for me to have the guts, because I have this tendency to want to make everybody happy. You know, there's an entertainer in me and all that. But to really have the guts on my own, you know, to potentially hurt somebody's feelings or piss somebody off, or even more terrifyingly, make somebody not like me because I actually told them the truth.
Which really shows us it's what we need to do. It's what we need
absolutely.
To do. It's our obligation. You know, there's all these posters that if you see something, say something. You know, in our case, it's especially when we have the space for it. Like, you know, in my work, it took me just about more than 3 years, that's for sure. But it took me more than 3 years to realize that if I want to be more effective, I got to tell people the truth sooner, because that's actually what they're coming for. That's actually what they're paying me for. They're paying me for to see and express and share things that they wouldn't see otherwise. And being nice and compassionate is a given. I don't have, like somebody told me, like about 6 months ago when things shifted, somebody told me, hey, you couldn't be an asshole even if you tried. And I said, you know what? I'm going to take that to heart. It's true. So telling people the truth, but, you know, not in a let me protect your feelings sort of way. I'm protecting your feelings because this is who I am. And I'm ultimately not really being an asshole. Like, I'm not here trying to, you know, that what's the negative connotation of an asshole? Like somebody who doesn't care. Somebody who doesn't
right.
give a shit. So obviously when we hear that, we're like, oh God, we don't want to be told by that. But for you and me, because this is the age where anybody could turn off a podcast at any time. You know, we don't force anybody to do anything. So while some people may take offense just for the title or poster or an idea, if people feel the resonance and feel the vibration, you know, if they tune in, they know exactly what we are about. And they'll actually expect directness, they'll expect this. And I think this is really important, and we can really commit to each other and to the listeners that we are going to really share and express what's really inside of us. And it's going to take us, it might take us 10 podcasts to be at a place where we really want to be, mm-hmm. but we make the commitment to really our own spiritual asshole, our own monk, our own shaman, mm-hmm. and just treat people the way we want to be treated. There's a reason why, you know, Trump, why is he at the top of the polls? Because people are looking for truth, even though he's not a real candidate, he's not a real option, but he is seemingly a real option because amongst what's possible, he is like the most blunt and direct out of the bunch, and people like that. In Israel, I actually was pretty sure that the latest prime minister wouldn't have gotten elected again because he really is an asshole. And
yeah.
there are so many other options. And yet he won, you know, like a landslide. And I realized that I was like, you know what? What people are looking for is someone who's direct and someone who is on, at least, you know, you're clear about what they say. And it's important to give people what they're looking for, but at least what you really mean. And I think it would be a good reminder, not just for you and me, but for other aspiring teachers and coaches and any kind of spiritual people of any sort, to really not hide behind the titles and really not hide behind compassion. And because the information is out there. Everybody knows that it's about getting back to the heart. And everybody knows that everybody knows the information. But who do you have on your side that reminds you? Who can you count on, really, to tell you the truth? Really, for us to have a show where people know that when they listen and when they call in, they're gonna get our truth. We're not hiding behind a fancy title of any sort. Mm-hmm. So it's an exploration, and I'm just happy to, well, I'll be, you know, my own, it's not an agenda, but I have had that, you know, name sort of thing for many years now. So I am happy to find another spiritual asshole and at least talk about it. If we don't talk about it on another podcast, at least let's call this podcast Spiritual Assholes. So at least we have, I know that I have manifested the vision and the rest, we can move on, you know, either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it's well, first off, I'm in because I love that whole idea. And, you know, that's actually something that I've been trying to manifest in my own work. You know, I practice Big Mind, which we've talked about a little bit, and, you know, maybe we'll talk about a little more some other time. But as a facilitator of Big Mind, and you know, honestly, as I'm sure you find it in your facilitations of the journey ceremonies, you know, allowing, so the idea of Big Mind is that we have all these different parts in us. Yeah, every single human being alive, not only physically, but, you know, has the characteristic, the character trait of being an asshole and being a compassionate one. And, you know, and some of the really scary stuff that we don't want to admit, you know, there's a murderer in all of us. The more we deny that stuff, the more power we give it. You know, that's kind of an old Buddhist thing. The more you energy you put into denying something, the more energy you actually get it to push back. But, you know, so there is an asshole in all of us, you know, and honestly, if you're denying that, then you're not doing yourself or the people in your community or your families any good, because sometimes you just really have to step up and be the asshole, because sometimes people really need to hear it, you know, hear it for real.
I love it. I love the fact that what you're saying is not only do we need to step up and be the asshole, but we need to really embrace the fact that we all have a real shadow. We all have the capacity to do just the opposite. It's a thing that I actually say a lot to recovering narcissists or narcissists, period, where, especially when people project certain things on me, I like to have a good conversation, and I say something like, listen, just because you can be an asshole, just because you have the capacity to be an asshole, just because you have been an asshole, just because you are an asshole sometimes, doesn't mean that that's who you are. And that's what happens when people get lost in this idea. They're like, oh shit, I have this, like, I'm looking at women, I'm looking at this, I'm doing things, I'm being jealous. No, that's not me. That's not me. I'm not. No, it's not true. It is you. And you're making a decision to do what's better for the collective. You're making a decision to do what's better for your life altogether, not right now. But don't deny those feelings. It would just be like denying the night. It's impossible to deny the night. It's definitely coming. Death is coming. You know, darkness always exists. Otherwise, light wouldn't be there. So I like where you're going with this. It's not just a comical aspect of being blunt and direct. It's actually saying that we are literally spiritual assholes. Literally.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I welcome it. I welcome it, you know, and yeah. You know, and it's, you know, one of the big things in our culture right now is, you know, the whole racial discussion, you know, and every once in a while we hear somebody, you know, positing this concept that this is a post-racial society. And every time I hear that, I just laugh. I'm like, there's no such thing. You know, everybody has racist stuff in them. The beauty of it is that if you actually acknowledge it inside of yourself, then you can honestly look at it from an objective point of view instead of denying it and then reacting to triggers. You know, there
Absolutely.
Are times when I walk down the street and I see something or someone and I'm like, oh my, I should run away from that. And then I look at it and I'm like, oh, well, that's just a couple of black kids. You know, they don't necessarily have to be gangsters. To deny that is going through my head does not make me a whole person. To sit here and say that yeah, I look at that. I have media coming into my head. You know, I don't filter out. All that stuff is inside of me. But am I going to act and react in a way that is positive or negative? See, then if I actually say, okay, that's the racist inside of me looking at this situation, but it's not controlling me and it's not controlling my actions. And then I can say, okay, that was just a trigger. I can look at it and say, oh, wow, look at these really interesting young gentlemen that maybe I'll have a nice conversation with. And then I get to actually sit down and have a nice conversation with a couple of nice young gentlemen.
Let's not forget that we're a product of society, and your racism and whatnot, it's really the same way where I grew up being trained to hate non-white, non-religious, non-Jewish people. It was actual training. So it doesn't necessarily mean – so now when I walk in – and now I'm in New York City, I get into a cab and I see the name Muhammad on the thing, my heart has a little, like, it skips a little beat. It takes me back to my childhood where I was scared of being kidnapped and dragged around in the back of a car because I know these stories that have happened. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make me into a racist. It just activates the racist part in our society within me and my own training. Just because I grew up with black people jokes, because those are jokes that I heard in my society. There weren't even black people around us. And then coming into New York City, and I went into a public school, and guess what? I actually thought that everybody was right from the way people behaved. That was just the experience that I had. And so it activated my own racist tendency. But it's not what I'm trying to say. We got to give ourselves a break. We do not own it just because we feel it. It's part of our society. You know, walking down the street, and like I go to this bathhouse in New York City. One of the hardest things for me to do and first is to walk into the different rooms and keep my eyes on the floor, make sure that I don't look at people, because I realize that this is something you do in the streets, but it's much easier and more fun almost to do in the bathhouse, is we literally objectify people, you know, specifically, you know, women as a heterosexual male. But there is this tendency that we just objectify women. We are racist. We are sexist. And it's how we grew up. And instead of like feeling guilty and shameful about it, we just say, hey, this is where we grew up. This is how I've been. And I'm not going to hide it. I'm just going to acknowledge it and make the effort to look at a woman that I'm attracted to and just feel love and compassion, as she is my, you know, a sister of the human family. To come into a cab and realize I'm a little scared, and, you know, just give the guy extra love, just because otherwise I would ignore them. Same thing with the black kids down the street. Like if a couple of black kids walking down the street and I have like mean, I don't want to say jokes, but comments in the back, to just be like, okay, this is where I grew up. This is what comes up for me. It's my job to transform it live. So am I a racist? Am I an asshole? As part of the human race? Absolutely. Who I am right now in this moment? Quite the opposite.
Yeah. Well, we have the choice. And if you can break that pattern, you know, of the trigger to the to the instant reaction, just break that pattern, identify and acknowledge it for what it is. Then instead of, you know, running away or calling somebody a name, you just look and you make eye contact, you smile and say, hey guys, how you doing today? You know, it's that simple. And all of a sudden, you know, we talk a lot about energy, and I have a feeling we're going to talk a lot more about energy. And actually for me, you know, 2016 really is an exploration of energy and how energy works. But the thing is, you know, what is it, 87%, I don't know, there's a lot of different things, but of human communication is not in words, is nonverbal. So you've got this energy, and if you're going to have that energy of, oh my God, I'm scared to death of these two guys because they're clearly going to hurt me or out to get me, or, you know, gangsters or whatever the, you know, whatever the hell that story is in your head, they're going to feel that energy. And, you know, your body says a lot about what's going on in your mind. But if you can actually take that and rewrite it, then all of a sudden your physical bearing is different. And the energy that you exchange with these other people is completely different. And frankly, it gets safer for everybody. You know, it doesn't make you a victim. All of a sudden you're not a victim. You're clearly making the decision. I am not going to be a victim. I am not going to be a victim of my shame. I'm not going to be a victim of my culture. I'm going to actually step outside of this. And even in these little moments that we have, it has massive change throughout culture and throughout society. You know, it's that whole concept of, you know, the butterfly, you know, moving the air here and, you know, domino effect, and yeah, there's a hurricane somewhere else. Or, you know, the concept of the 99th monkey or the 100th monkey kind of thing, where there's a tipping point. You know, I think
see it. You know, we see it in our own family. We see it in our own family and friends immediately. Mm-hmm. Immediately. I never expected to see so much expansion and changes in my own immediate surroundings just because making the changes internally. And
yeah,
it wasn't when I got high and mighty and like, oh yeah, I'm such a good person now. No, that wasn't it. It's, you know, sitting down with a family member. I had a, you know, I'm trying not to pinpoint names and all that, but I remember we had a family gathering the other day, and you know, I come from an Eastern European Ashkenazi descent, and AKA white, and in Israel, we really, the way I grew up, we weren't even allowed to speak to Sephardic Jews because they were darker skinned. They come from Spain. They come from Morocco. They weren't allowed in my school. And that was a comment that was given. Like, my best friend was Yemenite, and I would get in trouble because my best friend was Yemenite from Yemen. And the other day, it was a family affair, and it was somebody from the family that married a Sephardic Jew, and not, you know, aka not white. And I think I was the first one to just sit down with the family and say, hey, listen. And somebody was talking about the family. They were like, yeah, this guy's trouble. This guy's, you know, he's really not the good guy. I said, and I've heard those stories for years. And I said, you know what? Let's just be honest with each other. The only issue this guy has in our family, and that he's not white, only real issue we have. No, it's not true. Yes, it is. And, you know, having these kind of discussions in my own house, in my own family, it changed so much. I remember even talking to that specific guy, and I said, you know, do you realize that you also let people treat you differently? He's like, oh, what do you mean? I said, listen, you have these feelings of inferiority just naturally because the way we treat you, not because, you know, the way you actually are. You're one of the sweetest guy I've ever met, but somehow you feel less than. And even saying comments like, oh, I don't want to take any of your time, but I'd love to spend some more time with you. I'm like, you know, you realize that you're saying that because you're not white and you've been treated like the black sheep of the family for many, many, many years. These kind of conversations, it does magic. It really does magic because it awakens our own capacity to see the light and the dark, and just having a little bit of relief, like a sense of humor about it. Speaking of spiritual assholes,
I was gonna say, man, you're such an asshole, Aria. How dare you at a wedding,
exactly,
for God's sake?
Exactly. And this is the kind of conversations I'm having with people, and that's why spiritual assholes is such a real thing. This is not like a funny thing. It's a real, real, real thing. And, you know, I'm trying to start up in my own work, like groups where, you know, meetup.com, for example, right? So meetup is amazing. If you go to New York City, there's 8 million people in New York City, these millions of people meet up. I typed in Arab and Israeli, and there's nothing. There's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We got 8 million people hovering around. We're all talking about peace and spirituality, but there's not a single group of people, Arabs and Israelis, are getting together ongoing to just say, hey, we've been assholes to one another. Can we just talk about it in this peaceful country? And, you know, it makes my job easy because I know what needs to be done, but it's hard because you're considered an asshole at the same time. So this is the commitment that you and I are making, is to always push not just the envelope outside, but our own envelope. Find out the places where we have this tendency to avoid these truths. And only this way, only when we reveal the light within our own heart, within our own soul, then people around us can feel free. They go, oh, if they are looking at this and they don't sound like shameful about it, then maybe I can do it too. And that, I think that's the work for you and I, to actually, you know, take some of the layers off of these sources of such shame and such.
Yeah. Well, there's, yeah, and, that, yeah, that word keeps
trouble.
Coming up. Yeah. You know, that's the word, right? It's that shame, you know, we all walk around with our shame, and then we hide it because, you know, we're shameful. And I also really love what you just said about, you know, our commitment to ourselves, you know, that you and I are making, you know, to really be open and to be vulnerable. And it's like, yeah, I have a lot of shame around a lot of things. And as these conversations go, that sort of stuff is going to be revealed. But that vulnerability is not only me talking to others, but I love what you just said, because all of a sudden other people sense that in you, and all of a sudden now they have the freedom and they actually get to say things to us that maybe they've wanted to, or that they're shameful of. And so if we're giving them permission to be vulnerable and to break down some of those barriers, they actually get to say things to us that they wouldn't otherwise do it, you know? And,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden these things just disappear. They really transform, you know, in the Big Mind practice, you know, we actually talk as these parts of ourselves. And what we find is these shadow voices, the dark sides of us that we all have. Except, of course, for Donald Trump. But we all have we have these shadows. And the beauty of it is that if you can work through that shame, open yourself up, open up the heart, be vulnerable, then these things transform. You know, we find that our racist actually can transform into a deep appreciation for the differences that we have. Cultural differences, physical differences, spiritual differences. And then, you know, and then the next step is, wow, I actually get to be challenged. I get to have somebody offer me something that I wouldn't otherwise have. And that's growth, be it spiritual growth or physical growth or business growth, you know.
Right.
All of this
right.
stuff. If we can,
absolutely.
We can go through everything, then life just gets so much easier.
Well, that's just not if any. As we go through this, as we acknowledge Trump as nothing but our own brother, nothing.
Absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with Trump. Trump,
no,
Trump is us.
You know,
we all have a. We love Trump. You
there
know
is
what?
So much
Trump.
I love about Donald
will,
Trump. You have no idea.
We
and it's not
all
just the
wanted to be
movie.
Trump. We all wanted to be Trump at some point. We really, really, really did. Let's be honest.
I do it every day. Seriously. You know, of course, you know, you get those clips on Facebook and you watch a 30-second clip of Trump, and there is definitely a voice inside of me that is screaming to get out. Don't you wish you had the balls to stand up in front of literally millions, if not billions? I mean, he's speaking to the world right now. And to just say that shit? God, if I had those balls, I might be worth 10% of what he's worth.
Well, That's what we're doing here. That's the whole idea. He's inspiring us. He is spiritual asshole.
He is.
You know, and you know, I was thinking about same thing with the prime minister of Israel, which I made a comment before. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I don't really. Everybody's. If I don't like somebody, it's really a representation of me that I don't like, and I know that. I remember when I realized that I'm not in favor of his ideologies. It was very specific. I watched a documentary, and he was talking about that peace is rooted in security. And I realized that that's a whole other ball game that had its merit for a long time. You know, it did. At some point, peace in the village really meant how strong your fence is. That is very, very, very true from the tigers and the animals. And we're trying to get out of that mentality because it's still the same mentality, saying peace is rooted in security. That's an awful truth that is not real anymore. Peace perhaps was rooted in security, but right now peace is harmony. And that's when I realized that this is a guy I wouldn't really want to vote for again. And you know what? I guess Bush and all these guys, they're a lot of the same mentality, which again, to their credit, there was a long time in the history of humanity that peace meant how strong is your security force. We have to get out of that mentality. Well, sorry, we don't have to do anything. We are getting out of that mentality as we're realizing that we really are all one. And peace is really rooted in our own security and our own feeling of safety with life. Do we feel safe with life again? Do we feel safe with the fact that we're spiritual and we are assholes? It's both.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a really beautiful concept in the Buddhist tradition that you are my mother. You know, obviously regardless of gender, but to just look at someone and say, look, you're my mother. I come from you. And if you can, it's that whole, you know, you had mentioned it, the concept of we're really all are one. You know, there's any differences between you and I and anyone else are just, they're just made up. They're ideas. They're actually not real. And they become real when people start to believe them and then act on them. But yes, us going on and acknowledging that we need each other and we have so much to learn from each other is the new way of peace. Yeah, you know, you talk about it. I know I've heard you talk about it a number of times. You know, we've got, you know, the news, which of course is a huge profit center for the networks now, which, you know, early, you know, prior to the mid 70s was not a profit center for the networks. We've got Facebook, we've got all this stuff where everybody's trying to grab your attention. You know, so everywhere we're saying, you know, so-and-so is getting killed and all this stuff, but statistically the science is telling us that especially where we are and pretty much everywhere in the world, again, you know, I don't want to open a huge can of worms. Yes, there is suffering, a lot of it everywhere, but it really is the safest time in human history to be alive. And that's statistics. That's the science that is they're telling us.
And it's so hard for people to acknowledge, or it has been hard for people to acknowledge. So we're going to keep reminding them. We're going to keep reminding them for as long as you're talking about the problem, for as long that you keep, you know, just rehashing how, you know, 2%, 1%, whatever it is, percentage of the world is so-called controlling and destroying the planet. It shows of our own belief of our capacity to change. And if that number is really true, that just 1% of the world is affecting the rest, I think that's very, very, very exciting. It is. Because what would it look like if just a few of us just continue to speak the same message and a few of us focused on love? But the key is to acknowledge our inner asshole, because for as long as we demonize Trump and ISIS and all those guys, then we don't acknowledge the wholeness and the beauty of life. We got to go to ISIS. For me, the Israel-Palestinian conflict used to be like a real thing. I grew up in Israel. I was trained in a specific way. But now I realize that one of us needs to be the bigger brother, and I don't care who. But one of us needs to say, killing is not a real thing for me. It's not a thing. And when we acknowledge the fact that, yes, we get scared, we do want to kill one another when we are threatened, and we're willing to acknowledge that we are one big, big, big happy family.
Yeah.
But the capacity to be happy, we can grow food, for God's sake. We can enjoy this. We can enjoy Earth. Really, really can. So thank you for the reminder that this is the safest it's ever been. Thank you for...
I'm losing you a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's just the time. I'll tell you something. It's been a lot of fun, this podcast, because I've been doing a podcast now for a year, but I'm listening to myself talk with you, and this is the most alive I have felt in a while, maybe because of the permission to be a spiritual asshole. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I've had a ball, and I absolutely would love to continue pursuing this whole idea. I think we need to have regular discussions like this. I mean, I've been writing down notes here, and you know, I've got notes, you know, we've got topics for like 10 episodes already just based on this discussion, and God knows where we'll go from there. So, I mean, I've really enjoyed it.
You know,
it, so.
Listen, we're going to do is we're going to have our own topics. We're going to have guests. But more importantly, we'll be available to call in. We'll be available for people to actually get, you know, the monk, the shaman, and the assholes at the same time.
Absolutely. And we can have some real discussions. We can take all the gloves off, just have real discussions, you know, bring your vulnerability. That's what I'm saying. 'Cause we want to talk about real shit. We want to talk about the real stuff. We don't honestly, you know, we joke about it a little bit, and, you know, politics affect us, and we'll joke about Trump, and we'll joke about whatever's going on. But the bottom line is nothing Donald Trump says really affects you. He might trigger you and you might get pissed off. But the thing is that we want to talk about what's really, really, you know, your real fears. You know, what are your real shames? Because I think that you and I, we're not doing it. You know, we're conduits. We're a space for discussion. But by providing, you know, the path, providing the journey, providing a space where somebody can come in and be safe and be vulnerable and, you know, reveal things. I mean, call in and be anonymous, for God's sake. But I really think that this is the kind of discussion that can really help people and really heal people and, you know, really make a real concrete difference everywhere to everyone. So there we go.
I'm in. We can do it.
All right.
I mean, I'm in. We can do it next week, same time. That works for me, or we can find other times. But I'm definitely in. I'm committed. I enjoy it, and we'll continue next week.
Yep, we'll rock on. All right, man. So we are at the end of our time. If you want to stay on for 34 seconds, you can listen to my incredibly cheesy outro that I've made for the Maverick Way Radio Hour. But
I'd love that.
You and I can talk about we'll talk about the spiritual assholes. So Aurea again, Aurea Pollock, Urban Shaman, New York City. You can always shoot me a message on Blog Talk Radio if you're interested in finding out more about Aurea and his stuff, or, you know, just start tuning in. Wednesday at 6:30. We'll keep rocking on this thing. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Aurea. Catch you later. Join us for the Maverick Way Radio Hour with Blaine Freest, the first and third Wednesday of every month at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Find us at blogtalkradio.com/themavway. You can find this show and other archived episodes at blogtalkradio.com/TheMavWay.
Dude.